note a few days ago, a couple of weeks ago or something, telling me about some things that you were going to get up to now at this time in your life. And they're big visions and big things. And for that reason, I put this big stadium behind me so there could be millions of people who could possibly hear and share in the energy and truth that you're about to embark on. And so I just want you to tell me, tell the audience, what is Stephen up to these days?
Well, I'm going to start by telling the audience that I felt stuck for a while. There were a couple of years where I just could not get clear about what I wanted to do. I've been a leadership guide for 30 years now, and I felt like I wasn't contributing at the level that I wanted to. And I felt like I was in kind of the shadow land, if you know what I mean. And I was unclear about what I wanted to do. So I sat with it. I prayed about it. I meditated on it. I journaled on it. I tried things that didn't seem clear, but that didn't quite work. And then I got really clear that I wanted to 10x, 100x the contribution of my work in the world through great leaders that want to make planetary changes. So I started combining my skills and gifts of leadership with the function of artificial intelligence to suss out what would be 100 leaders that want to make a real contribution to this planet and have the resources and ability to do so through leadership and leadership development. And so I intend on working with at least 10 of those within the next 12 months.
So I want to go into some depth on what you said. It's easy for people to say, and many people do, in this hyped up world of exaggeration, gee, I've been a leadership dude and been all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah,
for 30 years.
Yeah.
So tell me more about, tell the audience actually, because I know you and I've read your book and seen some of your stuff and had the chance to get to know you a bit. So, but I want you to share openly and truthfully what's been on your heart these 30 years that has led you to say, yeah, I've been a leadership guide for 30 years. What is that about, being a leadership guide?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, there's always context to everything. Here's a brief amount of context for that. But I came up through financial services. I was on the succession plan for a major banking firm. And I started to see what leadership was and what leadership wasn't. And I started to see what a leader could do when a quote unquote leader wanted to contribute and really make positive changes. And I also saw what an individual could do when they did not have that level of integrity or willingness to make positive changes. And that was nightmarish. So I decided at that time in my life, I was in my late 20s, moving into my 30s, that I wanted to contribute. And the best way I knew to do that was to work deeply on myself, to learn as much as I could about myself so I could serve humanity more fully. And I've been doing that ever since.
So that is fabulous. And one of the common things of people that I interview on this and my other podcasts and stuff also is this feeling of serving. I want to serve. I want to add good to the world. I want to help people, you know, is the common thing people say. What's the difference between, you know, living a good life and doing stuff and being committed, as you are and have been, to serving humanity? What's the difference? Talk about that, please.
Well, I think a person has to understand what service is in the first place. And to me, service is a level of presence and a level of awareness and consciousness toward making, you know, a positive difference wherever you go. So it isn't just when we're getting paid, Kellen. It's not just when we're, you know, doing a job as a manager or a CEO or as a leadership person. It's all the time. It becomes something we're committed to being in the world all the time. And that kind of just takes us over. It takes me over when I'm clear about that kind of thing. And that's what I live into each and every day. So that means, what am I going to say yes to? What am I going to say no to? How often am I going to put myself and my body on the line to do that?
I love that. And you said a word, it says it's something that you choose to be. So it's not a jacket you put on when you go do a certain thing.
Right. I wish it was, but it isn't. Yeah,
no, Ben, you don't even wish it was. Yeah. It's a thing that comes out of your heart and core, and you just, as you work at it, and I work at it, you become more comfortable at it, with it, in it, so that it just becomes all of who you are, and it's consuming. So you did that. You did it for 30 years for many different companies, and I've seen at least a partial list of things. And then you described at the beginning, you got old or you got stuck, or it was like, okay, I've been doing this. Now what? And then you went into 100X that effort. And what would that look like? So you find 10 leaders that want to make planetary change and be effective and make the kind of difference that you saw leaders could make, only on a much smaller scale. Talk about, if you dream out loud, what is that going to look like? Because commitment is a big thing. And I know you're going to go do this thing all in. So what does that look like?
Well, it looks like being very discerning. So, you know, at this phase in my career, I could have continued, and I have always had amazing clients that I've worked with and enjoyed working with, but I could have continued with my existing client base. And this is where I say that part of this becomes integral. Like, where do I say no? Where do I open up my heart more fully to the contribution I can make at this time in my life, which is scary because it requires some real courage to get again in my 60s out of my comfort zone into a real service orientation and consciousness, open my heart up again, start over. I'm really starting over in a real way. And so to look at, let's say a person says, gosh, the soil on planet Earth doesn't have the nutrients in it because we've washed it out. It's not as fertile as it used to be, and people aren't getting the nutrition that they want. And maybe I know a leader that has a plan to regenerate soil so that people are eating food that's actually nutrient dense. And I would want to work with that person to support that individual on a wide scale rollout plan to regenerate soil on the planet. That's an example, Kellen, of something real that would make a real dent for the positivity on the planet, so that when we buy fruits and vegetables at the store, we're eating fruits and vegetables that actually enliven our bodies, thus creating better health and as far-reaching impact. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for any listeners out there that want to make that kind of impact and have the ability and the willingness to do it. I think those are two of the ingredients, the ability and the willingness. And sometimes the willingness gives us the ability, but that's who I'm interested in working with.
The willingness yet often trumps the ability, because often we shortchange our abilities. But when we go all in and we're willing to crawl over the broken glass and do things that might be scary or might have seemed daunting or impossible, then the ability just kind of shows up.
Yeah.
You know, as we sort of invent that as we go along, right?
Well, for sure. I mean, I know anytime I've been willing to do something, I can find the ability, whether it was running up a mountain or climbing a mountain or anything I've ever endeavored to do. For me, the soft part of change is the willingness. And I've also said this to many of my clients who want to be around great employees, people that are really supportive of the larger vision of an organization or an endeavor. Boy, first thing I want to do is look at what's that person's willingness to change. What's that person's willingness to be coached, willingness to be strong and clear and courageous, but then also a willingness to take great feedback.
I love that. And so I want to dive into, that's a perfect example, because we know, I mean, proliferation of allergies and all kinds of problems that didn't seem to exist 100, 200, 500 years ago, and now we have stuff all over the place, and part of it is gut biome and nutrients and the whole nine yards. I want you to walk through a little bit more in a little bit more detail, because there are lots of people who feel a yearning. I want to help. I want to add good to the world. I want to help people. I hear that all the time. So do you. And then you said, gee, I felt like I wasn't. And then you said, well, I meditated, I prayed, I journaled. And those and related elements are so essential and revelatory to both deciding what to do and getting the courage, clarity, the willingness, as it were, to do it. Can you talk a little bit more about this sort of the soul part of going into that place? I mean, you said, gee, I'm starting over. And I happen to know that you're 62, or I think you are.
And you're right.
Well, you said 60s, and I happen to know that. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that journey into the scary part. Talk a little bit about that, because people feel like, well, that's good for Stephen or Callan or the man in the moon. But, you know, I X, Y, Z, and then the list comes out. So talk about that a little bit.
I think a lot of us at this time on the planet are unfulfilled. And I think that's unfortunate, not because it's wrong or a terrible thing for them to a person to admit to, but I found myself unfulfilled. And what I think one of the key ingredients is that we keep growing, that I keep growing, that I keep on the journey, that I keep moving, and that I keep learning, and that I keep contributing. I believe in a thing called the goal line, which is something I know you believe in too, because you're, you know, reaching 250 million people this year. You know, that's a goal. But I also believe on the soul line, and the soul line fulfillment, you know, we think about the depth and the breadth of our lives. I think we want both. And the soul line would look like, what's my fulfillment level? Do I wake up in the morning and do I feel enthusiastic or inspired about the day? And I'll tell you, Callan, there's plenty of days I don't. You know, I can wake up on the wrong side of the bed, but I want to keep going and I want to get up and do the thing that contributes the most on the goal line, but also intersects with the fulfillment on the soul line, so that I feel like I'm living a life that's inspiring for me, that I have a purpose and a reason and a meaning. It's been said, I'm sure many of your listeners, and I know you've heard this, Callan, it's like life is empty and meaningless, except for the meaning that we add to life. And I like that because it makes me think a lot, like, what am I going to make this life mean? Listen, I restore a lot. By that, what I mean is I take good care of myself. So I'm not this, you know, guy that's running around with my hair on fire every single day, but I'm clear. I'm clear about where I want to contribute and what I'm committed to, which makes the biggest difference. That's part of the journey, is getting to the clarity. So how do I do that? I think that's really what you're asking. I listen. I listen to self. I believe in a thing called future self. I can bring my past self to the party, and sometimes I have. That's been somewhat disappointing for me, because my past self has these experiences that are either good or bad, but it's not my future. So I like to connect with, what does my future look like, and what would my future self need to be to contribute 100x on this planet? That's a conversation I'm interested in, and it's why I love to hang out with guys like you. You and I don't talk a lot, but when we do, it's always rich and deep and meaningful. So that, to me, is part of the journey, too.
Listen. So you've said such a word, listen. I listen. And you talk about future self, and who does that need to be to contribute at 100x. Talk about that listening. We're bombarded with, should do this, and, you know, all the noise that goes on around us. What are your processes for quieting and listening so that you have access to the sound of future self and those things?
Well, that was beautifully said, how you said that, you know. So, you know, listen, I mean, and I mean the word listen again, it's most people don't listen. There's been a lot of times in my life I didn't listen. And most people think listening means content. Like, I'm going to listen to what Kellen's saying, and in part I am. But there's a deeper listening to what every one of us as human beings are saying. And when I'm listening to another human being, I'm listening in part for content, but I'm also listening to the story behind the story and contextually what might really be going on for that other person? Are they sad? Are they hurt? Are they angry? Are they inspired? Do they mean what they say, or are they trying to figure it out? So we listen to other human beings, but the real deep context of listening in my world is how well do I listen to myself, my authentic self? How willing am I to dive into that rare soul space and listen to the heart of my heart and what I know is true for me, and then to go apply it? And that's where it gets really interesting, because when I do that, you could call it God or spirit in part that I'm listening to, but I know it's real. I know it's an authentic part of who I am. And when I do that, magic happens. Things really occur gracefully, organically, and they occur at a 10x or an exponential nature, that it's not like it's linear. It's not like A goes to B to C. It's like A goes to 100,000. You go, well, that's a letter and a number. I go, I know. They're different. But it's all from the listening. Deep listening is the greatest way to create that I know.
Now, I love the way you describe the layers, because in listening like that, I'm sensing in you a yearning to help me, listeners, all of us, understand that nonlinearity, that ability to hear beyond the words and even beyond the words below the words, but sort of this contextual thing that you described. And you described it well, but I also know it's not something that happens by itself, because we live in such a noisy world where everything and everyone is clamoring for our attention. If you were going to help me develop that ability, first to believe I even can, and then to start to be able to listen in those deeper levels so I could hear intuition, inspiration, divine guidance, how would you help me start doing that, access those things?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'm listening now for the answer. You know, so the answer to me is, it's in little bits and pieces. So if a person said, I don't know what you're talking about, I go, well, do you want to know? And if a person said, yeah, I want to know, I go, start with 30 seconds of getting quiet, of putting your phone down, of turning your phone off, of not having any music or noise, and just close your eyes, ask a question, and listen. And then over time, start to broaden that to where it becomes contemplative, or it becomes reflective. Like, I want to reflect on what I just heard you say and listen and slow down. And, you know, this goes way back to Man's Search for Meaning. You know, Viktor Frankl identified for us the difference between stimulus and response. And if I really want to become adept at deep listening to others or to myself, I really want to increase the gap, because I'm going to have you ask me a question, there's going to be a stimulus for me to respond. And most people are listening to themselves and what they're going to say before they even listen to the other human being. So this other idea of creating the gap between stimulus and response, just giving permission to widen the gap, often can be the trick to give us access to greater listening. And then we just practice it like we practice anything.
Thank you for saying the practice part, because sometimes when we talk about that to those who may not practice or understand, it sounds like mumbo jumbo. And when you say slow down, when you say create stillness for a moment, when you say let there be silence, even in a conversation, you give permission for there to be that space, so that it doesn't feel like the minute there's a period at the end of my sentence or someone else, that the space is somehow offensive and we have to fill it with noise, because it's filled with the opportunity to explore. And that exploration is the doorway to that deeper space, is what I'm hearing you talk about.
Oh, it's it, really love what you're saying, Kellen. And I, for me, the key word that I heard in what you said, which is so brilliant, is permission. That we would each give ourselves permission to really listen to others, to really listen to ourselves. And when I'm working with people in coaching, and I think you do a lot of this just naturally, or maybe you've practiced it a lot as well. I know I've practiced it. Is I don't give a lot of advice. I don't give a lot of answers to people because I think we all have our own answers if we're willing to create the space that you and I are talking about and we're willing to practice listening to what we really need. Now, sometimes I don't listen to those answers or apply them, but the more I practice it, the more I trust it. And the more I trust it, the more I do it. And the more I do it, the easier and more fulfilled my life is, including things not to do, by the way. Like, I get the answers for that shit too, you know?
Yeah. You know, it does take practice, and it does take letting the scariness that might initially accompany space or silence. It does take getting used to that and creating it. Confidence in that is creatable. Like if you don't know it to start with, like when you're working with one or more of these leaders, that's going to 100X and fix the soil or fix water, you know, clean water or literacy or pollution or prejudice or, you know, one of these people or more that are dedicated to do something real. There's going to be a lot of space in those conversations. And the space is where the genius comes. And if we fill up all the space with swirling and noise, the voice of the spirit is a whisper, almost always. Like rarely is it a 2x4.
Yeah. My experience is it is almost always a whisper, as you said. It's not hitting us over the head until it does. Now, I've had a few experiences in my life where I wasn't listening to the whisper. And those experiences added up. I got little hints along the way. Maybe, Stephen, you're going down a path that doesn't have a positive trajectory to it. So I then did get hit over the head with a 2x4 more than once in my life. So what we're talking about here is revelatory in a way, because it's rare for a lot of people to listen to the whisper, but nobody's got that gift better than anyone else. And anybody that tells you they do, like I have that gift and you don't, they're full of you know what, because this is something we all have endemic to us as human beings. And some of us have practiced it more.
That's the difference right there. Someone who says they have it, maybe they've worked on it, and so they have easier, faster access. They've cultivated it on purpose, but it doesn't mean that you don't have it and couldn't develop it, because we all got created the same way by the same designer. I mean, we all came from the same place with divine gifts and talents. Yeah. And what's happened to you right now is that's woke up again and saying, hey, you're not done yet. I got another thing here that you can go jump into if you're up for it. And you did your thinking and journaling and said, yeah, I'm up for it. Let's get it on. So that's what's happening.
Well, and honestly, you know, I think it's probably a little over 2 years of that process I shared with the listeners earlier of being feeling stuck. It required a tremendous amount of patience. So in a way, I've been listening for the whisper for 2 years. You talk about patience, but Kellen, I'll tell you something. I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't trade it for all the money in China. I wouldn't trade it for anything because of the gift in it. The gift has taught me tremendous humility, tremendous patience, which is, I know what's going to be required for me to hold space for these leaders that I will be working with will require that. It will require even more listening and tremendous patience as we resolve or find new solutions to problems we've never faced before. This planet is dealing with lots of heavy issues, And I am not cynical about it because I know what leadership can do. I know what humanity can do. I know what our listeners out there can do that have a bug to contribute, that want to add value, that want to serve. But I love what you said earlier. You know, everyone's talking about it, but how many of us are willing to do it? It doesn't make any of us a better person. It's just like stepping into something and meaning it. And I've been watching you do that for years.
Well, the 2x4 piece is meaningful. I lived a long time not listening and doing things that were other people's agendas. And I got my 2x4s loud and hard in starting in 2007. And I was at the end of a 30-year career, and I started life all over again, walked away from everything I was doing and started over. And not really knowing at all what to do. And it was a result of a couple of pretty significant, I call them divine interventions. That's what they were. But what that tells me when you describe that process of ignoring and then getting it, it's sort of a big enough thing. It's like a cumulative whisper until it accumulates into a brick, you know, smash. What it tells me is it's never too late to matter. Like, I don't care how much you, not you, Stephen, but you listeners feel like you've wasted time or you haven't done what you could do and it's yearning and I'm too late and I'm this, that, and the other. It's not true. And it never will be true. You can make it true by allowing it to stop you, but it's not true. And Stephen, starting with this new thing after 2 years of waiting and thinking and reaching and yearning, and now having a feeling of what that is and formulating and making it concrete, that can happen and will happen to you at any moment. And Stephen's example is a perfect example. Stephen, I want to ask you a question about that 2 years. You said, Jim, and wait 2 years. People ask me all the time when I tell stories about life and stuff that's happened to me. Oh, what would you change? How could you, you know, if you could? And I've got a lot of crap, messes and ugly, messy things. And so there's a reason to ask that question, right? What would you change? And I always say nothing, never. And I want you to elaborate a little more than you did about that patience and the 2 years and what, in that case, 2 years, it could be 2 decades, what it taught you, really, that you feel like you have now that will equip you for this thing you're embarking on that you didn't have if you'd had this thought 2 years ago.
Brilliant question. I mean, in two words, is inner strength. I did not have 3 years ago the inner strength to do what I'm doing now. There's a thing, and I believe in divine intervention too, you know I do, but to share with your listeners, I'm deeply spiritual. So I believe in divine intervention. I also believe in what I call the loyal forces of the opposition. and the loyal forces of the opposition for our listeners out there would be self-doubt, worry, and a lot of other things. You know, I believe in minimizing the downtime. So here I am, a man trained to minimize the downtime, understanding loyal forces of the opposition, having altitude on divine intervention when I get quiet and listen, and I can't get there. I'm even pushing and forcing some things. And the things that I pushed and forced didn't work. So then I just sat back and I did what was in front of me each day. And I spent more time reflecting and contemplating and being aware that something was percolating, not knowing when it was going to get clear. Because, I mean, it takes a lot of patience. 2 years, you think about it, is a long time. It's not a long time in a course of a lifetime, but it's a long time when you want to do something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I do. So, but the result of that is a deep courage and inner strength that I wouldn't trade for anything. It's even hard to define it. It's not perfect, but it's there in a way. The foundation is there in a way that it wasn't before. So for any of the listeners out there that are doubting, what Kellen said earlier is my experience. It's never too freaking late to listen and act and contribute. And so you go, well, what about patience then? Trust the inner voice. Trust the wisdom of yourself. And a lot of other people might be looking at you going, what are you doing? Why are you changing direction? You might get everyone that thinks you're nuts, but you trust yourself enough to take the step. I don't know, Kellen, if anyone's ever thought you were nuts, but imagine they have. I know people think I'm a nuts. I'm like Maverick McGee in a way, but I know you can relate, Kellen.
100%. So you've said trust a couple of times, and think about spirituality and religion, not necessarily any particular religion, but spirituality and the connection to the divine. Every single person breathing air feels it. They feel it at some point, like there's something larger, bigger. I don't care what you call it. Call it whatever you want, but you know it's there. And then there's some sort of language that talks about surrendering, and they use that word of surrender. And then people cringe sometimes at that, feeling like, you know, it's abdication. You don't take responsibility, get off your butt and whatever. When I think of, and I feel that way, I didn't get understanding, I equate now in this conversation.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is if I surrender,
is the refiner's fire. And I think we're so addicted to pleasure in our world. You know, we all want it faster. We want it quicker. I mean, I see people, and I want to just cop that I have my part in this. You know, I love my pleasure too, right? Like, I'll raise my hand. I'm not like throwing stones from a glass house. I'm like, I raise my hand. But I see, it's like a Starbucks, you know, where the person's like, it's going to take 2 minutes to do the coffee. You know, we want it to be hot or whatever. And it's going to take, I've seen people like almost freak out about it. Like it's 2 minutes of my time to wait for the hot coffee. And, you know, the dopamine hits. Like, I think there's good dopamine and bad dopamine. We all know what some of the bad dopamine is. You know, we're hearing all about these addictions to our screens and scrolling and all this kind of stuff. Maybe there's a place for that. But the good dopamine is earned. It's dopamine I earned because I did something and I got an infusion of beautiful energy in my body because I did the walk through the park or the run or the workout, or I wrote the poem, or I had the deep, hard conversation with a loved one that I've been avoiding. And I got dopamine because now we realize we're closer and we're not separate and we love each other deeply and we were both really listening to each other. So we want to practice good dopamine. And good dopamine will help us through these trials and tribulations, Kellen, that seem like they're never going to end. And they do end. They build us. They strengthen us. And they have us get on the, when we're on the right track, we feel good. There's lots of reflection from our world, not just from people, but from how we feel. But we don't want to feel. We don't want to be sad for too long, or we don't want to be without the hot coffee for a minute or two. You know, we want everything now, now, now. And I see that as getting worse. So I want to be a voice for our listeners to say, we have, what's normal isn't normal.
We've created this download and double click world. Everything needs to be solved in the length of a TV sitcom. And it's not, and it never was, and it never will be. The world doesn't grow that way. Trees don't grow that way. Development, Grand Canyon didn't get built that way. Nothing worth its salt at all was created that way. It was all created with the care and the time that was required to do it. You know, the refining you talked about. So I love that. And that's such a valuable thing to take a hold of and intentionally counteract. So if I'm a bad dopamine hitter, got to have everything right now. I'm the only person on the road with anything that's important to do. And what's wrong with the rest of you people and all of the 27 different ways you could describe that. But I hear Stephen saying, hey, that's a problem. So now I'm going to ask you to teach again for just a minute. If I was genuinely curious about I'm intrigued by the idea that there's power, there's peace, there's possibility in that other, what would you tell me to do to start to get done listening to this and do what?
I would say stop that and do this. And the do this part, we know what the stop it part is. I'm not going to spend much time on the stop it part. It's everywhere, right? Just look around. It's everywhere. The do this part is get yourself routines and rituals that support good dopamine. So I like a lot of that first thing in the morning because I like dopamine. I like what it does in my brain. But so, you know, it's, when I started doing it, it wasn't a thing, but now it's a thing, like a cold shower. You know, I do thermogenesis. I have an ice tub that I get into. And it's refreshing for one thing, but I sit in there and I get to quiet my mind and I get to build my ability to sit in the cold because it's uncomfortable. So I'll even say it's painful. For me, it's painful. I don't look forward to it. But when I get out of that ice tub, I get a dump of dopamine that lasts me for hours, if not through the whole day. But that's an example of an effort. You know, it's the same thing with my rowing machine. I row, you know, almost every day for 10 to 20 minutes. It's exercise, but it's, for me, a powerful dopamine hit. Journaling is powerful dopamine. Prayer is powerful dopamine. When I eat nutrient dense food and I say no to the potato chips or whatever the thing is, it's less, there's something that happens in my psyche that says I chose myself. as hard as it can be at times, because these chips are designed, Kellen, as you know, they're scientifically designed to have the proper salt and crunch to send the signal to your brain to go, you want more of this. Eat a carrot, it's not the same thing, but wait 20 minutes and tell me how you feel after a bag of greasy, non-nutrient dense potato chips and eating a carrot or an apple. All signs of good dopamine, all ways to get more dopamine.
So conscious choosing, be aware of, stop. But I love little phrases. And so one of the things I tell clients is I give them a $1 billion phrase, and I have half a dozen of these things. And I call them, this is a $1 billion secret. When I'm about to say it, I do the whole dramatic slow down thing. This is a $1 billion thing. And if you'll do this thing, you can accomplish any goal. And it's three words. Notice and choose.
Yep.
Notice and choose. And so what you're telling me is notice when I am habituating or acting into a habit of anything that doesn't matter. Notice that. Notice maybe how I felt or how it feels. And then choose consciously with my right, my sovereign right to determine who I am. Notice and choose. Notice and choose. And I don't care what you want to accomplish. If you do that, you can have anything. You can create whatever you want. Notice what you're doing, what its outcome, et cetera, et cetera. So notice and choose. And that's what you described. And of course, then I thought of this thing. So,
well, if I may, because I love notice and choose, and I think it's brilliant. It's simple. It's brilliant. But I've got one similar that I'll share.
Please.
For your listeners. But it's almost the same, but it's DNA. Which I want to give Ed Oakley credit. Ed Oakley is not on the planet anymore, but he taught me this tool many years ago when I was teaching at Enlightened Leadership. And we taught this in cultures and organizations all around the world. So simple, DNA, decide, notice, and acknowledge. Whenever I do something that gives me good dopamine or is a behavior or a habit that I want to move in that direction, I would decide, notice, and acknowledge. And that will start to shift the neural patterning in the brain over time. It may not happen right away. It may not happen after 50 times, but it will happen.
Well, we didn't learn our crappy habits and crappy attitudes in a minute. Yeah. You know, that was a learning that took some time. I want to make sure, because I want you to be able to be fully expressive of anything. We've had a wonderful and rich conversation. We have about 7 or 8 minutes left. I want to ask you, is there something that you wanted to talk about at all that I didn't bring us to? And if there is, I want you to explore that. Dive in and let's cover it in richness.
Well, I think we're covering a lot in a short period of time that's super important and valuable for myself, for you, and for any of the listeners. I do think we could spend some time talking about encouragement, like being a voice of encouragement for yourself, because I think we're living at a time when a lot of people are feeling stuck, which is another reason I'm grateful I went through my stuckedness, because my stuckedness, I felt like I'm never going to come out of this. Maybe I'm irrelevant. Maybe I'll never be relevant again. I'm going to do the motions every day to get through this time. But that's what I was doing. I was getting through it. So, Kellen, let's talk a little bit about, let's be a voice for anyone out there that feels like, yeah, I hear you guys, but you don't understand. I'm stuck. I'm hurting. I don't know what to do.
The first thing I want to say to you, the people that Stephen has just addressed, is that you, I don't care where you are or what your stuckedness is right now, what you're struggling with or what you're hurting from, you absolutely matter. You do, you do, you do. And it may not seem like it right now, and there may be pain. So step one, for me at least, is do not give up. Yeah. Do not give up. You know, people give up on their lives. Some people do the ultimate thing, suicidal ideation and other stuff. But don't give up, because no matter what it is, nothing lasts forever. 2 years is Stephen's thing. Do not give up. You're valuable. You're worthwhile. I personally want to meet you. If you want to reach out and talk to me, I do. I love meeting people. So that's my first piece of encouragement. But I'm not going to give step two. Stephen is. Steve, what's step two, Stephen?
Well, I think it's to use everything that's happening for your growth, everything that's happening for your advancement. I believe we all have a curriculum. Let's call it a spiritual curriculum. Your soul, and I'm talking to you, listener, the one listening right now, your soul has agreed to learn certain things, and you're in it right now. You're learning it, and it's uncomfortable. This too is going to pass, to Kellen's point. Do not give up, and also start to look. What's in this for me? What if there's a gift in here that I can't see yet? Can I move into cooperation and acceptance for this time in my life, as crappy as it is, as hard as it seems, that it will never pass? It will pass. Breathe in, breathe out, eat the next meal, say the next thing. And I think if we're doing steps, step three, follow up with Kellen. He's offering support. I mean, like, if it's not Kellen, it's your neighbor or someone that you know that you're not willing to ask support from, for whatever the reason. Maybe you feel shame or some kind of guilt about something. But we as human beings need support. We can't do it alone. Being isolated is way freaking overrated. So don't isolate and ask for support.
I can tell you from that point of view, one of the greatest things that I learned at 52, when I had a divine intervention change my life, I hadn't ever reached out to get any help. I'd been struggling with mental illness for decades.
And
choosing to get some help, to say, I can't do that, was like a major learning. And so underscored, emphasized, hearts and flowers around what Stephen just said. That's the absolutely. Reach out to somebody, priest, teacher, counselor, friend. Like, do not live this alone. I don't care how black the world is or your life is or whatever it is. Yes, because we need you and the world needs you. What else? Stephen, what are your thoughts?
Well, just to add, I mean, people care more than you might think. But when we're being hard on ourselves, we think nobody cares. I went through that in part of my 2 years. Nobody cares. You know, we're not doing anything really right now. Nobody cares. It's not true. It's a misidentification and a misunderstanding.
That, again, I just couldn't agree more. You don't may not know who they care, who cares right now. And the divine always cares. But you may or may not be able to see that at a given moment, or it may not be showing up in a way that you believe or can touch or feel. But it's still there. And looking for it. Like, are you looking for it? Are you open to receiving? One of the things that I made so much mistake on is I had things defined a certain way. It has to look like this, has to show up like this. And my ability to release the need I had to have things be a certain way in order to believe in possibility was a huge change for me. And that goes to that trust and surrender. There's a path, there's a process. And no, I can promise you it probably isn't ever going to look like you thought it ought to. And that's okay.
It's okay. But again, back to willing, be willing. So let's just say there's someone listening goes, nobody cares. You don't understand. Nobody cares. Okay. Kellen said, I agree. Like, spirit might care. God might care. Let's say you go, well, I don't believe in spirit. I don't believe in God. Well, then go outside. Take a walk in the park, get your face in the sun, let nature heal. There's just a lot of places we get to go. What I have to, you, the listener, has to choose. And things build from there. I always say small things done consistently create major impact. So it's the little thing. Do the little thing. Make your bed. Do the little thing. Move on. So, Kellen, this is fantastic because we've gone from changing the planet with world leaders to let's make sure we make our bed. But you know what? They all matter. We're all human. The world changers I'm talking about, they make their bed too. I've been talking to them recently. They have the same trials and tribulations. It doesn't seem like they do, but they do.
Stephen, I am just delighted to have you had this conversation with me. Our time has come to an end. Okay. You have a final thought you want to give to us, to besides a wonderful thank you for sharing this time with us. What's your closing thought?
Well, I'm gonna wax woo-woo just a little more and say that my final thought is I believe in universal love. I believe that love is a behavior, and I believe that this planet can use more universal love, kindness, diversity, sharing ourselves in joy and humility, taking responsibility for our own part in things, which is all under the umbrella of one love, which has been sung about. You're a singer-songwriter, Kellen, so you know. These songs are out there. Listen to them. But I believe, and leave us today with the thought, the idea of how could I become more universally loving of myself and others? And how does that lead to contribution?
I want you to listen to this a couple of times. I couldn't agree more. Love is the engine and the glue that holds everything together. Move forward, listen again, look Stephen up. Stephen, give us a website or a place to get a hold of you.
McGhee, McGhee, leadership.com.
McGheeLeadership.com. Take this, live into it, love yourself and move forward and go and create your contribution and your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.